What is the scariest book you've ever read?
Chris Barclay, originally from East Walnut Hills. The scariest book I ever read was Peter Straub's Ghost Story. It was so scary, I had to get the book out of the house after I read it.
The Book Club at 91.7 wants to hear your voice. What is the scariest book you've ever read? You're invited to call the Book Club at 91.7 hotline, 352-9188, and leave a voicemail. You'll be prompted for your name, where you're from, and what book scared you the most and why. You may hear your answer on the air. What is the scariest book you've ever read? Call 513-352-9188 and share the shivers.
The Book Club at 91.7. Good morning. I'm Mark Purcell. Glad to have you along and glad to have Tamara Lenz Minty in the studio with me. She is a curator at the Taft Museum, but more importantly, she's also a writer. Started out as a poet and now has her first novel out. It's called The Boy at the Museum. And Tamara's here this morning to talk about her first novel. Good morning.
Good morning, Mark.
I know from a previous conversation that you were inspired to write this novel from an advertisement you ran across while doing some research for an exhibition you were putting together. Tell me how that all came about.
Right. Well, back in 2007, the Taft Museum did an exhibition on the sculptor Hiram Powers, who was a 19th century American sculptor. And I was assisting with the research, and one of my duties was to go to the Cincinnati Historical Society and dig through 1830s newspapers looking for references to Hiram Powers, and more specifically, references to Powers' first job, which was working at a place called the Western Museum. And so while I was looking for, you know, things pertaining to Powers, I ran across this advertisement for an 8-year-old boy who was born without legs who was on display at the Western Museum.
So this was not a museum in what we consider a museum in this day and age.
Right. Well, it started as a natural history museum and then by the early 1830s had turned into kind of a museum of natural curiosities and oddities and kind of sensational, shocking exhibits.
A freak show, I think, is what some people would call that, right?
Some elements of it definitely were the predecessors of what we would call a sideshow or a freak show.
Yeah. So the Western Museum here in Cincinnati, and I guess a lot of folks don't think about it, but back there in the early 1800s, this was the far reaches of Western civilization in the U.S.
Yes, it was.
So did you have any inspiration from, having spending so much time at the Taft Museum and kind of living in a little bit of that day and age?
Oh, yeah, of course. I mean, I work most days of the week in a building that was built in 1820, and there's just so much Cincinnati history tied up in the building that is now the Taft Museum of Art. It was a private residence, and there are a couple scenes in my book that take place in the building when it was the home of Nicholas Longworth, who was the second person to live there.
So beyond the advertisement, what did you do to find, the setting and develop the setting for the boy at the museum? Because you do a nice job of capturing Cincinnati back in that day and age.
Thank you. Newspaper ads, for one thing, were wonderful to try to find out exactly what was being shown at the Western Museum. Wonderful descriptions and ads. Also, people's accounts of visiting Cincinnati at the time. In the 1830s, a woman named Frances Trollope came here. She was English. She came to America. She has a whole book about her reflections on what America was like at the time. And she spent a long time in Cincinnati. And so her observations are very interesting, a little sarcastic. And
I was going to say some observations and complaints about her visit to America.
Yeah. But, and then just other personal accounts of people coming here as a child and visiting the Western Museum. There really are a lot of wonderful descriptions of Cincinnati at that time.
You began as a writer, as a poet. Why did you decide to make the transition from poetry into prose?
Well, I always thought I would like to try to write a book at some point. I mean, since writing poetry, I've also done a lot of feature writing for magazines about art, and mostly historical artistic figures, you know. And so, and of course, I do a lot of writing at the Taft about exhibitions and about art. So I don't know. I have had ideas over the years, but this one is one that I just really got kind of obsessed with and passionate about, and it was something that I felt I, you know, was able to pursue and spend the time setting a schedule for myself to actually finish the story. So.
Well, as you talk about Enos, the boy born without legs, who is on display at the Western Museum, mm-hmm. you also talk about the family he came from. You have your other main character, Arthur Watson, who is also involved, a young man on the rise, just getting his job at the Western Museum. And you speak from many different perspectives. Well, not many different perspectives, but different perspectives in the book. Was that challenging, writing from those different voices?
Yeah, it was really interesting. I mean, I started, you know, wondering how would I construct the story, because I didn't feel I could write from the perspective of an 8-year-old boy. I just didn't feel I could do that authentically. So I enjoyed coming at the story from a couple different angles. And it was interesting thinking about, you know, being a young man who's sort of naive and a little clumsy, and then also, you know, the widowed mother of Enos, Elizabeth, I enjoy those kinds of things. One of my favorite films is Rashomon, which is a Japanese film directed by Kurosawa, and that's exactly what it is. It's a story of a murder, but witnessed from like four different people's perspectives. And I just find that interesting to me, an interesting way to get at a story.
I'm speaking with Tamara Lenz Minty, the author of The Boy at the Museum, available where books are sold. You're hearing our conversation here on The Book Club at 91.7. As you were writing this story, you were sparked by this advertisement. What made you think this was something that could become a story? I mean, what in the advertisement really reached out and said, Tammy, write me, please?
Well, a few things. I mean, first of all, I just the whole idea of displaying a person on stage simply because they're different. I knew that was happening, but I didn't realize it was happening in museums. And, you know, I just thought how horrible that is, but maybe not so different from what people are fascinated with now.
Yes.
With certain reality TV shows, you know. Also, the ad listed the boy's name, and I thought that was unusual. The ad also said that the proceeds from admission were going to benefit his education. And I wondered, is that true, or is that just a ruse to get people to come in and pay admission? But then I did what a lot of, you know, what modern day researchers do. They do things like type the name Enos Stutzman into Google. And and I discovered that he went on to be this really important figure in American history in the Dakota territories. He, first of all, by age 17, he became a teacher, and later in life became a lawyer and was the attorney who helped to broker the acquisition of the Dakota Territory.
Wow.
And so I started to really think about what kind of child he would have been, what kind of personality he would have had. And I was able to read about him as an adult and then imagine what kind of child he would have been to grow up into the adult he became. So,
well, you have... While you have fictional characters in here, and Arthur Watson, and I guess a real character whose story you developed, you also mm-hmm. have some notable Cincinnati names, Dr. Daniel Drake,
sure.
Nicholas Longworth, among others.
Right.
How did you feel about mixing in these real life mm-hmm. Figures in your fictional story?
Well, I found it very interesting. Again, you know, working at the Taft in Nicholas Longworth's former home, you kind of feel close to the people who live there.
Yes.
And so I knew I had to include him in the story. And he was a friend of the proprietor of the Western Museum, Joseph Dorfoy. He was also, knew Dr. Daniel Drake. And in the advertisement, Dr. Daniel Drake actually has a big paragraph where he describes the boy's condition. And
really?
So I knew that Drake had been at least... met the boy, or, you know, and he was the originator of the Western Museum, and then it passed to Joseph Dorfoy. So I felt he would be interesting to include, and sort of include parts of the science, and then of course all this pseudoscience stuff that was going on. Like, there's a character who I invented who's a phrenologist who of course comes to town to do some demonstrations at the museum, and so it was fun. I enjoyed, you know, a lot of my work with art has to be very factual, but it was fun to imagine really what things were like, what people were like, what their motivations and their actions were. And
So was the other display, you talk about the Western Museum, and you know, Enos is on display as, you know, a freak of nature, if you may, mm-hmm. with, you know, born without legs. But there's also a wax figure display that kind of plays on people's morbid curiosity, too. Was that part of the Western Museum?
Yes, it was. And Hiram Powers, as a young sculptor, he was extremely talented at creating incredibly lifelike, you know, figures. And so he was hired at the Western Museum to create wax dioramas of very lifelike people. So some of them were historical, some of them were morbid, like a diorama of a murderer and the family that he murdered, things like that. But then what he was most famous for, and what the Western Museum was actually most famous for, was this Infernal Regions display, which was, like you said, a kind of a shock and horror show, which was based on Dante's Inferno. So it was basically like walking into the depths of hell. And Powers even mechanized some of the figures, and he himself would dress up and walk through it and in character and sort of scare people. So that was very famous, and there are a lot of accounts of people visiting that. If anyone really living in the United States knew about it, and if you came to Cincinnati, you had to see the Infernal Regions.
So how long did the Western Museum last? I mean, obviously, it still doesn't exist today,
right.
or does it in some form?
Well, eventually, the seeds of the Western Museum eventually became what is now our Natural History Museum. But under the way that it's portrayed in my book, it was founded in 1820. Joseph Dorfoy took it over in the early 1830s, and he ran the museum until Hiram Powers left Cincinnati in 1837. So my book takes place in 1834. By 1837, Hiram Powers left Cincinnati and ended up settling in Italy permanently. Once he left, there really wasn't anyone who could maintain and make new wax figures for Dorfoy. And so Dorfoy couldn't really maintain the museum in the way that he wanted. And by 1839, he had left Cincinnati for New York and started another museum in New York. Now, the Western Museum remained in through the late 1800s, but it wasn't, its glory days were really these 1830s, 40s, maybe 50s.
It was only a shadow of its former self.
Right.
I'm speaking with Tamara Lenz Minty about The Boy at the Museum, her novel, available where books are sold. And Tamara, I have to say, well, we've talked and known each other for some time now, mm-hmm. and mainly we've talked about your work at the Taft Museum and the like. But when I read this book, I was like, Tammy, what are you doing? All these grotesque things. What is your fascination with all these grotesque? Because here with the Infernal Regions and everything that's in there, it's a little odd. I found it out of
it
character
is.
For you, Tammy. So where does that come from?
Yeah, I mean, it is sort of a gruesome, I guess, odd kind of setting, especially.
I mean, is it just a backlash that you're working around all this beautiful art all day?
I don't know. I'm really fascinated by things. Like, I mean, I'm fascinated with history, for one thing. And several years ago, I visited a place in London, the Hunterian Museum, which is a collection of medical oddities that mm-hmm. were owned by the father of modern surgery, John Hunter. And I was just completely fascinated. It's sort of repelling and fascinating at the same time. And I find it fascinating the ways that we have come to understand the body and understand, you know, things that are different about different physiologies, the way that, you know, the route that has taken. And so that combined with just, I mean, really being fascinated with history, Cincinnati during this period of history, and just people's general fascination with what is odd and unusual, I think.
Well, you summed it up nicely when you mentioned the reality shows of today. Well, I hadn't thought about the comparison between, the oddities at the Western Museum and what some people watch on TV these days.
Right. I mean, there are, shows that follow, I think there was one called the 600-pound woman, maybe on TLC or something. And and certainly there's an interest, I think, in this in popular culture in general. Right now there's this American Horror Story, which is all about a freak show, which that show is a little too scary for me, so I don't watch it. But
You only go so far in your interest in the grotesque.
Right. Well, and I, in the book, I wanted to create this kind of gothic setting, some kind of this dark, cavernous museum. And of course, then Ines Stutzman loves to read, and he reads things like Frankenstein. And so I wanted to kind of tie that in because he's fascinated with it. He himself, though he is the one who's on display as an 8-year-old boy, this doesn't really seem to faze him. He's out running around, sneaking off to explore the museum, fascinated with the, the two-headed cows and the living anaconda snake that's brought in and all of that. So,
well, I shared a little bit of my reaction to the story, but what has been the reaction of other friends of yours that, what have they thought about the book?
They tell me they like it, but and that it's a kind of a fast moving read. I try to provide good hooks through every chapter that make you want to keep moving through the story. And I really wanted to create a story that, was kind of fast moving and exciting and gave you just enough of the details of what this place was like and what the era was like without bogging you down. So you'd get have to slog through a lot of description or get bogged down in too much 19th century language. I wanted to give just enough of it to get the flavor, but also make it really readable for a contemporary audience.
I want to ask about your writing process, since you do have a day job.
Mm-hmm.
As a writer, how did you work on The Boy at the Museum? I mean, how were you able to incorporate that in your daily life? Did you have some type of routine in practicing your craft?
I did. And I think if anybody wants to do this, I think you have to have some kind of routine, a schedule, because you can get afraid that you're not going to, break through the blank page. And so you really just have to sit down and just start writing. And so when I started the writing and research, I was only working part-time at the Taft. And so I told myself, if I'm going to write a book, now is the time to do it. And so I had every Monday and Friday completely open. And so on Mondays and Fridays, I wrote or researched all day long and just, spent 2 years doing that and really kept to it and, finished in about 2 years. So
Tamara Minty, what are you reading now?
Well, right now I am reading a book called The Bones of Paris, written by Laurie King. It is closely associated with the exhibition that's at the Taft right now, Paris Night and Day. So it's set in 1920s Paris, and so is our exhibition. So there's actually a book club that we're doing along with the public library for this book. And so I picked it up and it's fun. Some of the characters are the photographers in our show, like Man Ray, and kind of picks up the atmosphere of Paris at the time. So it's right in the vein. I love historical fiction, so it's in the vein of what I love to read. So,
well, thanks for being here today. I appreciate it.
All right. Thank you, Mark.
Tamara Lenz Minty. Her book is The Boy at the Museum, a novel. You can learn more about it at our website, wvxu.org. You're listening to The Book Club at 91.7 on WVXU. You've been listening to The Book Club at 91.7. Kevin Reynolds is the producer. Rick Andres is music director and segment engineer. Robin Carey Allgaier is the announcer. And Bruce Ellis is the technical director. Bruce, what are you reading?
I'm currently reading The Magician King. It's the second book in a trilogy by Lev Grossman. The whole trilogy is, I would consider, Harry Potter for adults. The magic isn't necessarily forefront. It just sort of pushes the story along. The first book I had a little trouble getting through. It was slow in parts. The second book, held my attention much more than the first book, and I'm looking forward to the third book in the series.
Thanks, Bruce. So that's The Magician King by Lev Grossman. I'm Mark Purcell. I hope you'll be back next Saturday morning for the Book Club at 91.7. In the meantime, stay tuned for Weekend Edition, coming up next on 91.7 WVXU.